Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics. This is episode 26, recorded March 16th, 2010. Buonasera a tutti.
Good evening, everybody.
It's time once again. Sorry it took so long to get this podcast out. We've had some problems. For one, I had laryngitis for a couple of weeks.
Which isn't very helpful when you're trying to record a podcast.
Not remotely conducive to a podcast at all.
No.
And various other things have been happening, so it's been a little nuts. Apologize once again.
But here we are, back for you.
Yes. And we would like to say, just as a slight update to the assassin snail situation, we've got assassin snails coming out of our ears. Our proverbial ears are replete with assassin snails.
They're very cute when they're that small.
Yeah, they're all over the place now. And it takes several months for them to start showing up. But now we've got everything. Some of them are probably almost a third of an inch long, and some are just teeny little things, maybe an eighth of an inch long. But they're proliferating, so they're doing well. They're not breeding anywhere near the speed of other snails. Like I said, it's been about 5 months, and it took about 5 months, it's been about six, since for them to even show up as babies, and it's not like they're covering the walls or anything, but they're probably...
That is kind of the point of them, though, so...
Yeah. Maybe
that they don't do that.
Exactly, that they don't cause a population explosion, but instead
control
keep
them.
Snails under control, and they're doing that. I have one assassin snail that I put in a 20-gallon tank as an experiment, and there are a few ram's horn snails in there, small ones, but it's nowhere near a problem. And then in the tank in which the assassin snails are breeding, there are Malaysian trumpet snails, pond snails, and ram's horn snails, but they're keeping those under control. You can tell that they're breeding, but their adult size, interestingly enough, seems to be reduced, at least in the case of the ram's horns. And so they're having to breed at a younger age, and then the adults are getting decimated. Very interesting. But anyway, any other things we need to talk about before we dive into this particular podcast?
Well, I think that's it.
Okay, well, let's go. This is going to be probably part one of two about some other easy plants we haven't talked about yet. So we're going to start with the some of the stem plants, really super easy stem plants that you can work with.
Okay, and we're going to start with Ceratophyllum. So why don't you give us a description of that?
Okay, well, Ceratophyllum, or hornwort as it's also called, is kind of it's a stiff, sort of rigid plant to some extent, or brittle, you might want to say. It looks sort of like a bottle brush, like something you'll use to clean out something, that a thin glass container, sort of like a bottle brush made out of greenery. And Ceratophyllum, I believe, means horn leaf, and hornwort means, that wort also means leaf, so... Ceratophyllum is, I guess, a Latinization or a Greekization, if you want to call it that, because those are actually Greek roots there, of the name hornwort. And I'm not sure why it's called that, but it may be from the brittle nature of it. It looks a little bit like, I guess, if you're being imaginative, like an antler or something. Maybe that's where it comes from. Who knows? But it has this sort of bottle brush appearance to it, and... It grows very fast. It can grow an inch or so every day if it's in good conditions, possibly even more than that, but I've had it in my tanks grow about an inch a day. It seems to prefer some hardness to the water, and it's not really good at producing a heavy root system. It'll throw out a couple of roots, but it does great floating in the tank. I usually keep it floating in the tank. Sometimes I will plant it in the substrate, but a lot of times I'll just keep a few sprigs floating in the tank at the surface. Because it's fine-leaved, it's good for example, live bears to hide in, things like that. Or the young of certain egg layers that don't really eat their young all that much, like white clouds. It's good for them to take refuge in at the surface. And so those are some good uses of it. Let's see. As far as conditions go, it is not all that particular about light, especially if you let it float at the surface. It doesn't need a really heavy light, you can keep it in less than 1 watt per gallon, but it's because it's up at the surface, it can take advantage of that proximity to the light. I've kept it in, like I said, less than 1 watt per gallon, and it just does fine as long as it's right up at the surface. If you're going to keep it lower down in the water column, at least 2 watts per gallon, possibly more, are good. A nice thing about this plant is that it is one of quite a few that produces a substance that helps to fight algae. So if you're growing enough of this, it tends to minimize algae in the water.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Does it need fertilizer?
It does best with some fertilizer. It'll grow faster and healthier with fertilizer, in addition to the nutrients it receives from fish waste. So I find good results with just a basic aquarium plant fertilizer. Doesn't have to be anything really fancy, but one that contains iron and potassium. Phosphorus and nitrogen tend to be in pretty good supply in most aquariums. So if you add potassium and iron, that helps. A good trace element mix or a comprehensive plant supplement in addition to that, just following package directions, it'll be fine, and it'll grow like crazy. You'll have to throw out big wads of it every week or so, as long as it has enough light. And you know, hard water, like okay. I say, doesn't do all that well in soft water, I've heard.
All right. What about Anacharis?
Okay, Anacharis is kind of a fun plant. It often does well at lower temperatures. It's sometimes called parrot's feather, it's called Elodea, it's called a lot of things. Canadian pondweed is another name for it. I think Eleocharis is the scientific name. I'd have to look that up, so don't quote me on that, but I think that's what it is. And it is a very green plant with flat leaves. It looks a little bit like the branch of a fir tree, kind of, except each leaflet is bigger and flatter, roughly like that. It's often used in ponds. It's good at out-competing algae because it grows so fast. It's good with goldfish.
Do they
in
eat
aquariums.
It?
They do eat it, and they'll chew it up and make something of a mess of it, but at the same time it grows so fast that usually they're eating the older ends of it and the newer ends are growing. Once again, this will grow really fast. In an aquarium with high light and good nutrients, I've had it grow, you know, approximately an inch a day. And it's almost the same as Ceratophyllum in terms of the care it needs and so on, although it does better in cooler water, in my experience and in experience of others. That's basically that. But as far as root systems go, it doesn't have an extensive root system. It'll throw out a few roots, but it really does fine floating. And it will flower for you in an aquarium with a lot of light. I had that happen a couple of times.
Let's move on to Ludwigia.
Okay. And that plant is also called Ludwigia, and it's called, you know, various pronunciations of that particular name, but basically this one has the classic leaf shape, just the teardrop type of shape of a leaf, with sort of green to reddish leaves, depending on how much light it gets, on the surface, and sort of a purpley color underneath. So that makes for an interesting contrast in a tank. It does like high light. It'll be more green on the green side if it has lower light. It'll be more on the reddish side if it has higher light. And in a tank with about 3 watts of light per gallon and a 20 high with power compact fluorescence, I had it get pretty red and grow really fast. A nice plant there. It does a more extensive root system it will produce than the other plants we've talked about. And it works, basically does the same other as the others, though. It will float at the top and kind of spread out. It's a good place for other fish to hide, and I would say it's a nice contrast, like I said, with the color. It's good. Fertilization, same as the others. It will do all right in warmer water, does all right in cooler water, but you know, we need to keep that potassium and iron in the water and the trace elements, and it'll do fine. Higher light, it's not as forgiving of low light as Ceratophyllum is. I would say you probably want at least 2 watts per gallon or more is better.
Okay. Okay, and the last one we're going to talk about is nahas.
Yeah, this one's also called guppy grass, and can be a weed, actually. It grows like crazy. Probably one of the fastest growing. I've planted a few sprigs of this in a tank and have it literally just fill the tank in a few weeks. It's amazing. Called guppy grass because it's a good hiding place for baby live bears and things. You can plant it in the substrate. It has the sort of the same profile as the others as far as growth goes. It's really tolerant of low light, I think partly because its leaves are so thin. It looks like a really sparse pine tree, sort of. It has these long, thin, light green leaves on a stem, and so a lot of light can pass through different layers of it. So a plant that's four or five layers down can still get a fair amount of light, and that's part of the reason it's tolerant of low light, I think. But I've grown it in a tank with, you know, like a 20-gallon long tank with maybe an 18-watt bulb over it, so less than 1 watt per gallon, and it just goes to town. It can be a problem because it grows so fast, so you do need to keep ahead of that. And that, I would say, is basically all you need to know about it. You don't even need to be really careful with fertilizer for that one. It's probably, out of all of these, probably the easiest to grow. You almost don't want to grow it in some cases. And it has become an invasive weed in parts of the country. So, as with all other aquarium inhabitants, don't release it into the wild. That includes, you know, don't wash it down a storm drain, don't throw it out in your backyard, because you never know. A little sprig of it could be carried by an animal into a local waterway, or could be washed down a drain.
How,
you know, a storm
should you
drain or something.
Dispose of it? Just put it in a garbage can?
If you're going to
garbage disposal?
Typically this kind of stuff, you want to dry it out.
Okay.
If you're going to dispose of an aquarium plant, dry it out before you dispose of it and then throw it away.
How extensively should you dry it out? Like, totally dehydrated?
It should be crispy.
Yeah,
and
so
most
you
of
could
them,
stick it in the oven.
You could. That would be one
okay.
way to do it. It might smell funny, but you could do that.
Okay.
But you never want to dispose of anything like that in. And some of these can survive, you know, some of the marine macroalgae especially can survive ridiculous amounts of time out of water. So you have to make sure it is crispy before you dispose of it. As kind of a wrap-up, general tips about using stem plants in tanks. Well, one thing you should bear in mind is that these are important if you're going to do a planted tank, as part of, especially when you're setting up a new tank, as a way of functioning as a nutrient sponge. Because if you set up a new tank and you provide all these light and nutrients, trying to get your plants to do well, if at the beginning it's fairly easy, if there are excess nutrients in the water, that algae are going to take a foothold and go nuts and possibly outcompete your plants and destroy them and make a mess out of your tank. So make sure that you have fast growing stem plants like these, because they really suck nutrients out of the water. And that will help you to succeed. And as your tank matures, you can remove some of the nutrient sponges, because the other more slow-growing plants will have filled out more of the biomass in the tank, and so they'll be able to sequester those nutrients all right. And you still probably want to keep a few of them in the tank. But for example, I have a 10-gallon tank with Java fern. It's almost exclusively Java fern in there. But I couldn't set it up. Couldn't have set it up at the beginning like that. I had to use some nutrient sponge plants, because if I had done that with just Java fern at first, when I put those few sprigs of Java fern in there, they would have been outcompeted by algae. But now I have very few nutrient sponge plants, just a couple in there as a sort of a buffer, because the tank is just overflowing with Java fern, and it does fine taking those nutrients. Another thing is that you need to cut them mercilessly. You need to prune them back. These plants will be more attractive and bushy and healthier looking, less leggy, if you cut them back like crazy. You can even cut them down almost to the ground after they're well established, and they'll grow back pretty quickly, but they'll look more bushy, because every time you trim a plant, this is an interesting thing, when you pinch back the stem of a plant, a hormonal reaction occurs. You're changing the hormone balance in that branch of that plant. And what basically the hormones that grow at the tips of plants do is they tell the plant to continue growing at that tip. But if you pinch that tip off, it hormonally tells the plant to send out new branches. So you're going to get a bushier looking plant. If you don't, all of these plants will become very leggy and long. You can have Ceratophyllum or hornwort that will grow for several feet. You might pull a 3 or 4 foot long chunk of this plant and others out of your tank if you let it go for too long. And you don't want to do that. You want it to look bushy, and it tends to be more attractive that way, fits in your tank better. So just cut them back. Every week you can cut inches and inches off of them and sort of shape it into whatever form you like, and you can get a nice looking growth that way. But if you let it go, it'll just get leggy and long and cover the surface of the water and not be as attractive and tend to shield the plants from the light that they need. So, there you go.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions, please email us at info@aquarimax.com.